This is the iMoveU podcast, getting you private practice ready. We give you fresh ideas on mindset, communication, and clinical skills so you can have a fulfilled career.
Subjective history, it's more important than ever now. This is the conversation we were having, is this helping young therapists or not? I was having a chat to my two youngest therapists, Kat and Josh, saying, this is really challenging because that framework that uni put in for us, which a lot of us spend our time bagging out, that framework, it's a base to start from and refine your knowledge. And sometimes structure at the start helps you branch out and start to niche and figure out, that's the evidence, I want to do it this way or I want to do it that way. The framework's almost been taken from us now. If you're a new grad and you're shifting to online, you don't have the advantage of that 1 or 2 years under a mentor, even if they're old school or doing a certain framework or a certain objective assessment. I was kind of leaning towards those few years of experience, even if I thought I was doing it the wrong way, have helped me transition to online, because I feel like I can identify certain patterns and identify someone's shoulder and at least have a bit of a framework in my brain of what I want to do. That's gone now, which is scary but exciting. It means that our young therapists have to get really good at the subjective history, asking really good questions, some of the reflective listening and motivational interviewing. I think that will accelerate that skill set, but they might struggle with pattern recognition and things like that. So we're just doubling down on our kind of case review treatment mapping. What are you guys doing? And what are you finding around that subjective history? What are your favorite questions? I might start with you, Pete.
In the subjective, I don't think much has changed, to be honest, subjectively for us, if anything. I think it's just making sure that we spend a little bit more time, and it's just also getting them comfortable with it is the harder thing. Yeah. I found that someone that I would talk to face-to-face, when I talk to them on a Zoom call, they give me a much shorter answer. And so maybe it's just making them a little bit more comfortable with the actual software itself.
Yeah,
I've had one person who did say, look, I'm just in somewhere where I don't feel super comfortable talking about it right now, which is a slight issue for them. So they lived in a shared house and it was a little bit of a private kind of issue that they were having. So they didn't want to talk about that. So just keeping that in mind as well, is it something that they want to talk about if it's stress and sort of relate to those kinds of issues? What about yourself, AZ? What sort of questions would you put in extra?
I think in this landscape, probably just getting more clarification on how it's affecting them right now. And that could be with physical activity. Like they may have gone to a gym previously and now their exercise routine has changed. They're not doing the same types of exercises or the same environment that they were. So I'm someone who was in the gym and now all I've got is running. And so new issues are popping up. Or it could be that the gym is my out for all the stresses in life, and now I don't have that. And so getting clear on not only how they're feeling, but how it's now affecting them in a different or slightly different climate, depending on where they are. You know, is work now at home as well? Who else is at home, and what does that do for their thoughts, their feelings, their stress? So that's probably the bigger difference. Like, you're still going to ask those questions, but just knowing that those clients have changed. Like, if people still might give the general answers, like at work, this is happening. It's like, well, how much time are you spending at work now? Oh, well, that's actually decreased a lot. Is this still the main driving factor? Yes, no. So just getting really nitty gritty with what the situation looks like for them now.
Yeah, I've got a couple suggestions here. Beck's great suggestion. So what are your favorite questions to ask? I've put a few in there. How are you going with isolation? I think we just need to start opening up that dialogue before we even talk about pain or injury patterns. And what does this mean to you? So how is this impacting you is one we go over in the course. Where else is this showing up for you? So if someone's got shoulder pain or a bit of knee pain, how is this impacting you? Where else is this showing up for you? And often that'll get them really thinking about, oh yeah, it is. It's getting me on stairs, or actually I've stopped running as much, or I'm trying to do CrossFit or F45 home online and now I can't. And because you've started with, you know, how are you going in isolation, I think they're going to start to link the two and really see the value of their health. starting to see a lot more persistent back and neck pains in our clinics, and you know, with less load, less traditional load, obviously more stress and anxiety around. So we're really starting to see that rise up. I think we really have to open that conversation with them. Also, did you just cavitate your neck, Pete, live?
Absolutely.
I really heard that.
And just to Lisa Parkinson's question there, that you can get responses are a lot shorter. Also finding the internet's hard at times. One thing that I've done when someone doesn't have great internet is we'll still do the Zoom call, but I'll give them a phone call at the same time, and then we'll mute both ends. That way we can still see each other even though it's delayed, but it's got much better audio with that.
That's great too. I think what this time does is it really magnifies the importance of connecting with people, and that is really great for young therapists. We need to get away from special tests and a step-by-step or a treatment recipe. And this is all about connecting with humans. And whether you're coming from a, I just want to be the best damn health professional, or you're coming from a, I want my team to be busy, or you're coming from a, I want to earn more money as a therapist, all of those things start with connecting with humans. And that's why the subjective questions are, and the reflective listening and the motivational interviewing, all those things we talk about at the course, if young health professionals accelerate those skills now, that is going to be good, because that is the answer. That is the answer to getting better outcomes. It's the answer to getting busier. It's the answer to a busier practice. We spoke about the triangle, whether you're an employer, a team member, trying to make more money, trying to be the best physio, trying to be the best EP, you need to connect with humans. And I'll just wrap up this slide on the clinics that are doing best through this. They're the clinics that have connected with their humans. They're nurturing, they're asking the right questions. And I love seeing that. I love seeing the clinics that are just going back and calling all their patients one by one and just checking in if they're okay. So I think that's a really good thing.
Beautiful.
Rebooking. I put this question in because our team members have struggled with some rebooking with online. I'd love to know the group's thoughts. We even sometimes measure PVA, for those of you who know what that is. People are saying that that's dropping, and it's hard once you've got someone online to say do a second or a third consult. My short answer is it shouldn't change at all, but I'd love to open that up to Pete and AZ. What are you finding, Pete? Have you got any specific strategies around that?
I don't think it should change at all. I think we're seeing it's actually easier at the moment to rebook effectively. People have a lot more time. They're a lot more flexible. And because they're not traveling, if it's an online consult, I think it should be easier than ever. And it just comes down to that rapport and relationship you've built with that person. A lot of the people that I talk to at the moment, it's less about the actual physical issue, and they're feeling more pain because of stress and anxiety and everything else going on in their life. And so just having someone to be able to talk to there and just listen to them, I think, is more effective than anything that else that we could do at the moment. But what are you finding, AZ, with the rebooking at the other clinic?
Very interesting. I've got a couple of younger therapists, and they've actually gone the opposite. They've actually said it's easier to rebook now that it's online, and it's really shown their beliefs. So one of our therapists in particular, she came to me and said, oh, I can just see how I could actually rebook people more, because I'm not worried about the travel time or rushing from work, or are they getting the full value? So I think almost the in-person sessions felt more pressure, because I need to change pay, I need to do hands-on, and I feel bad for making them travel, drive in half an hour, wait in the front, and then come in and we educate and we guide. Whereas an online consult, they can do from work. If they just stay back, they can do it from home. They actually felt the opposite. Like the quote from one of our therapists was, I could see how much more effective I could do 5 in 2 with online bookings. So that was really interesting.
I think I've put in there, AZ, this really connects to why we're rebooking and why we want to see someone in the first place. We speak about this, the old biomedical model was, because we want to see the tissue healing, or we want to see scar tissue, or we want to do manual therapy again. So it's like, back then it seemed like people wanted to rebook more, but we've been arguing if you're a modern evidence-based practitioner and you're about behavior change and challenging someone's beliefs, nudging someone's beliefs so they actually get that healthy behavior change, that takes time and that takes education and that takes seeing someone and it takes reflective questioning. It takes them time to let the idea simmer in their brain, come back with a response. We also speak about how people forget 80% of the consult and misinterpret a big chunk of it. So I challenge young therapists on, why do you want to see them again? Okay, they're a persistent back pain case and they have unhealthy beliefs about their back. Cool. That's not going to change after your initial consult and seeing them again in 7 days. So I always nudge them towards, well, let's check in with them on Wednesday, not to do a manual therapy, which we can't even do now anyway. It might not even be to progress their exercises. It might be, how did their back respond to what you gave them? I always say, I still don't know how someone's going to respond. I love giving the wavy line analogy. And I truly believe that even with experience, you don't know if someone's going to have like that mini flare up or they're going to be much, much better after 3 days. I like to check in on that response, both physically and mentally. What was your mental response to the information we were chatting about, the conversation we had about your back? So for those people who are struggling, if you're a young therapist or you're a clinic owner and your guys are struggling to rebook because of online, I try and have that conversation about, why are we actually rebooking? People who struggle, I think, would probably lean too much on the physical side of things. Oh, well, nothing's changed yet. It's only been 3 days. I don't think that's the point. And in fact, I really think now more than ever, the point is mentally, how are they going? And are their beliefs changing? That's all I'd have to say on that.
It's a great self audit, isn't it? If I'm getting to the end of a consult and I don't know when or why I'm going to be rebooking someone, it probably says a lot of where your future planning is at. And if you were just rebooking a week's time because the plan was to just do more hands-on, I'll work it out later. Mm. It's a nice way to go, okay, well, I need to be better at this. How do I come into these sessions more prepared? Use some of our principles that we talk about, you know, Sunday night, look at your list. And if they get better, what do I do? If they're not getting better, what do I do? Come in more prepared so you can rebook effectively, because it doesn't work anymore to get to the end and go, yeah, well, I'll see you in a week and we'll do a bit more hands-on and free you up and go from there. We just can't get away with that. So it's exciting though, because it's going to lift the standard of all of our communication, lifts the standard of our planning and management ahead. So we can only benefit as long as we actually sit down, look at it, revise and improve.
Hmm. And I love what Jade said of conviction, conviction, conviction. A lot of it is going to be us believing in ourselves and the treatment that we're doing and how we're delivering that. So if you get to the end of that consult and you don't truly, or you're not really sure about when they should be coming back, that's going to come across to them. So just really believing in yourself. And that talks to what Beck Fear said of, I think in helping patients see the value in rebooking is the challenge. And we do self-treatment techniques during the session, send a physi track program. So I think I have been finding it difficult to vocalize the follow-up. They now have the tools to self-help. And I agree with that. They've definitely got the tools to self-help themselves, Beck. However, they probably don't have the accountability and the guidance that you provide. And maybe it's about reframing yourself from whatever type of therapist, whether you're physio, osteo, podiatrist, et cetera, to think more like you're a health coach and you're sort of helping this person through this. And it's not just a physical problem. There's likely a lot of other factors, and that's what we're helping them with. It's accountability. It's being there for them. It's listening to them, and it's guiding them along that journey rather than fixing them. I think that's how it helps me to perceive the rebooking side of it. Anything else to touch on for rebooking? Any more questions on the online rebooking? Any other things that are working or aren't working?
That's a good point though, there, that that's probably the counter argument. Well, if you're empowering people, they're empowered now, so you don't need to see them. I'm not a psychologist, but I don't think that's how behavior change occurs. I love what you said there about being a health coach, checking in on beliefs and just nudging them towards it. And not everyone needs that. There are some patients that once you show them what they do, they're away.
This is the iMoveU podcast, getting you private practice ready. We give you fresh ideas on mindset, communication, and clinical skills so you can have a fulfilled career.